Welcome to the 278th show, entitled Money Matters. Today's show, more pain to begin the winter of 2016. And ain't that the truth? Discussions in the show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I'm an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors, Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. And remember, indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk depending on the types of investments. There may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. Well, Money Matters is about money, and money is matter, and matters of money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our country, our economy, our planet, in some way or another, controls the very way you live your life. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it, about our lives and livelihood. In short, it's about you. Big hi goes out to Sally today. Good friend. Amazing person. Hi, Sally. All right. So here we go. Again, man, to say it's been brutal, you know, why I'm here, right, watching the market so you don't have to. I guess the question would be, not that you did, but how much did you lose if you lost? Okay, let's take a look at the Dow. 24,686, down 340. Now, remember these large numbers. 26,000, 25,000, 24,000, 23,000, wherever you're between, the higher number is a resistance level and the lower numbers is a support level. Now, the Dow was down 500-something. And so at 24,686, at least on the Dow, the high number, 25,000, would be a resistance point, and the low number, 24,000, would be a support, according to some technical analysts. Now, there's no theory. No analysis, nothing that can prepare you for where the market will go, because it is basically a sociological experiment. It's only the thinking of all the players in it on that given day. I always say the market movements are only the perception of all the players in it at any one time. However, the market will reflect reality eventually. And so, you know, I'd mentioned before 26,783 was the high. The most recent low was 23,500, somewhere in there. That's another 1,100 points below where we are. I'm not saying it'll go there, but some technicians would say that if it hit somewhere around 23,500-something, it's hit that twice. So that would be a double bottom. If it hits it again, it's a triple bottom. Just another theory in technical analysis. So we'll see where we go. What's causing it? Well, the theories abound, you know. Trump and his tweets can cause it. Federal Reserve are raising interest rates, although they're coming out today, this morning, saying that maybe they should ease off raising interest rates. Now, if you remember when the housing... when the dot-com crash happened, you know, the Feds dropped rates to zero, some close to zero, and then they started jacking them up again. And right through 2000 and 2008, they started jacking them up, and then when the thing imploded, they dropped them again, and now they started to jack them again. And there you go. So I'm not saying it's cause and effect there, but it's basically definitely some people believe this is not helping, for sure. The other thing is, you know, Monday we had, I don't know, a 600-point rally or whatever it was, because we heard over the weekend that there was some sort of a truce in the Chinese U.S. Tariff issue. And then the next day, Tuesday, Trump came out and said, I'm a tariff man. So he's, you know, this market is knee-jerking all around. Obviously, some investors are concerned. Some investors want out. Some investors might think that it's a good time to buy and they want in. Some people just can't take the swings, you know. So we'll talk about what you can do about that. Where it'll go from here. Man, I tell you, it's just relentless and brutal. I've seen some. I think I heard that 40% of the S&P stocks are down 20%, and it's probably worse now. NASDAQ 7123. I did some analysis this morning. I think the Dow's down, I don't know, whatever 24/7 divided by 26/7 is. I don't know, about 9-10%, somewhere in there. The emerging market index, one of the ETFs, EEM, it was down 20-something percent. Russell, I think, was 12, 13, 14, NASDAQ, somewhere in there. I don't have the exact figures in front of me. So, yeah, there we go. So we'll talk about the markets in just a bit, and we have a special guest in the studio, though. Let's see here, that one right there. Yeah, there we go. And our old friend and film compadre of the Grass Valley Downtown Association, Miss Marnie Marshall. Hi, Marnie.
Hi, Mark. What a nice intro. Thank you.
You're welcome. And so our local downtown, obviously, wherever you're hearing this radio show, you have your local downtown associations or Chamber of Commerce or whatever you have you. So tell me real quick, what's the difference between the Chamber of Commerce of Grass Valley, one of our local towns here, and the Grass Valley Downtown Association?
Well, the chamber is there for businesses, and I mean, oh my gosh, sorry. Grass Valley Chamber is there for tourism, mm-hmm. and of course they have businesses that are members, and so they promote their businesses and, you know, outreach to tourists and a place for tourists to come and get information when they come to town. Now, Grass Valley Downtown Association, what we do is we put on events that bring people downtown, but we also work on things like design, how things look, economic vitality, economic resource council, we network. And so we're really just trying to fill vacancies, make it look good, keep people coming downtown and having fun and enjoying downtown Grass Valley. And there's a lot of other things that we do, but that is the gist of it.
Sure. You know, part of the show is we call investing in community or community matters. I'm actually thinking of changing the, we do these little promo films. And Marnie and I have done quite a few of these promoting the downtown. So this is the season for block parties and vendors to be out on the booth. So what's coming up? Right. I already know the answer to that,
you
but
know
go
the
ahead.
Answer.
Yeah,
We've
yeah,
done
yeah.
Some films, but just to keep everybody coming downtown. So this is our living room. We want it to be full and lively, and it just radiates out. We consider ourselves arms of the city. We are putting on a street fair that is called Cornish Christmas, and it's in its 51st year.
Wow.
And it was started way back when, 51 years ago, to preserve the Cornish history and heritage of the area because there are so many miners that moved here from Cornwall and populate Grass Valley. So
is that how they got the name Cornish? They moved from Cornwall? Where's Cornwall?
So Cornwall is, well, it's in England.
it's a little place
on the coast over there, and they are unique and have their own traditions. So we have a Cornish choir that is strong. They're very proud of their heritage. You know, they were miners in Cornwall, and they were brought here because they were really good at it, and we had a lot of mining going on in the area. So they utilize those resources, and, you know, generations down, the people are still populating Grass Valley.
Are there other Cornish Christmases throughout different cities and in the States, do you know? Or is it just like Cornish is only in Grass Valley?
You know, I think there's a few other. There's a group called the Cornish Cousins.
Okay.
And so they are people that are proud of their Cornish heritage all over the world. And we have a little group in Grass Valley. And they must have something to do with the St. Piran's Day pasty toss that we have later in the year in March. Let's see. So we've got our Cornish Christmas on Fridays, 6 to 9, all the way through December 21st.
I recall that. And what are the hours?
We've got from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Okay. Mill and Main Streets are closed down. Now all the shops are open, as well as the additional food and craft vendors and activities that we have. Things like roasted chestnuts on the street.
Sure.
And
a lot of vendors. Is there going to be the dance section down the street there on East Main? Okay.
By the Del Oro, we have entertainment. We have entertainment that we pay for and we populate the streets with. And then we also have buskers that come down. So this week at the Del Oro Entertainment Tent, we have got the Tommy Knocker Cloggers, the Thunderfoot Cloggers, and the Ruck Ridge Family Band. So that's what you'll see on that end of the street. And you can visit our website and see our entertainment schedule every week. Cornish Choir performs at 6 and 7. And
the website is grassvalleydowntown.com.
Downtowngrassvalley.com.
Downtowngrassvalley.com. Okay.
And I would say get to know us. There's a lot of good information there. Also, on our Facebook site, we are on fire. We have a lot of things that we post every week about our businesses and events. So that's Downtown Grass Valley on Facebook.
Great.
Like us on Facebook. And then this Friday, I really wanted to get the word out that we are having a sweet little tree lighting ceremony.
Ah.
It's going to happen before our Cornish Christmas on Friday, December 7th this week. So I would say here's how it goes. You go to City Hall parking lot at 125 East Main. Santa will be brought in on a Grass Valley fire truck at 5:15. So that's exciting for the kids to see. Okay. So much fun. You can visit with Santa there in the corner. You'll see it. There's going to be a tree. There's going to be some entertainment going on, just music, ambiance. And then at 5:30, we'll have the Cornish Choir sing, and then we're going to have some awards for some people that have been doing really good things in our community. Huh. And our mayor, Howard Levine, will give out an award.
Good.
Our Grass Valley chair will give out an award. And then we're going to have a lovely woman help us sing a Christmas song as the tree is lit. So that's it. And then we'll walk into Cornish Christmas and have a great time.
Okay, I know it's family friendly. There are kids roaming the streets. There's restaurants, shopping, some specials.
Yeah, there's
just
some
a whole big thing. And you have two more coming, right?
We do. We have three more. We have the 7th,
which is
the 21st.
Tomorrow.
Yes.
And a week from then. Now, somebody mention it used to be on a Thursday night?
Hard to say. Mm-hmm. I know that Thursday night market has gone back and forth between Friday night and Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that summertime. That's our next big, hugest street closure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So phone number?
530-272-8315 is our office number. And please do call us anytime you have questions. And
are you looking for, I know you're looking for people to attend. There's no admission fee. You just walk into the street,
it's
big block party. Parking, I've never had real trouble parking, even though there's a lot of people. Parking is really not an issue, really.
You know,
it hasn't been for me.
Differing opinions on that, but I think because the locals know where to park, we kind of don't struggle with that as much as outsiders. So if you're coming from out of the area or you want to know some new areas, give us a call. Whoop.
No, you're okay.
Okay. And then we
vendors. Vendors. Are you still looking for vendors?
We're not looking for vendors so much as if you'd like to volunteer. We have these sweet little police dog ornaments that we made. Our Kano Grass Valley police dog, and we have our Grass Valley booth by the clock tower, and we'd love to have some help attending the booth.
Okay.
Yeah. Or sometimes we just need office help. So if you want to volunteer with us, get to know us, give us a call. And
that's 272-8315 again, 272-8315.
Yeah, definitely join us on social media if you are on Facebook, Downtown Grass Valley. And our website has that parking map, downtowngrassvalley.com.
Okay, so Marnie Marshall of Grass Valley Downtown Association. Marnie, you've always been a pleasure. I like hanging with you.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, for sure. And you can call. I've got it, Marnie. It's all right. And so she's trying to turn off the mic. Okay, Marnie Marshall, I want to thank you for coming. Downtown Grass Valley Association and Cornish Christmas coming up on Friday and the following two Fridays. Hopefully I'll have a booth down there myself, if not tomorrow night, maybe the next 2 weeks. We'll see.
All right.
That sounds good. All right, Marnie. Thank you very much. All right. There you go. We'll be right back with Money Matters.
Count it off my mouth. Maybe I'll leave.
Okay, Marty Marshall. Now, if wherever you listen to the radio station, wherever you listen to the radio show, downtown associations are all over the place. So for community radio, you know, support your local community. You actually improve our environment. You improve supporting local businesses. And you improve, you know, your monetary situation as well. So, okay, so the Dow down, let's see here. So what to expect? You know, we'd always say that, you know, it's a difficult time for people that are invested in the market. A lot of people are not invested in the market, which is why we do community things as well. But in my opinion, it's very, very important to have an exit strategy. And I've always used the analogy that, you know, when somebody goes to a slot machine and you go and you gamble, you know, most people will throw away $20 or $100 or $200 or whatever their limit is, and they'll walk away. They'll say, that's enough, and they'll walk away. However, I do find that a lot of investors don't adopt that walk away attitude in their investing. You don't go to a slot machine and say, well, I'm not down far enough. And then when you get down to a certain point, you say, well, you're down too far. I'm not going to get out now. And that seems to be, it's a hook, you know, it is a sort of a process that advisors and investors go through. You know, they say, well, you're down 5%, you're not down far enough, you're down 10, you're down 15, you're down 20. And then somewhere the mindset changes to, I'm not down far enough, to I'm down too far to get out. And so there is no exit strategy. So you could ride it all the way down. So at least in my opinion, it's important that you or whoever handles your retirement or whatever you have in the market does have an exit strategy. And exit strategies can be multiple. I mean, they can be, you know, if you lose 15%, you sell out completely. Not a lot of people will do that, but some people do. Or as it goes down, you start selling off securities and going into cash. You know, the more cash you go to, the less volatile the portfolio will be. So let's say you're fully invested, which in my opinion, fully invested in the stock market, in my opinion, is not diversified. But that's my opinion. So let's say it's down 5%. If you're fully vested in the market, you're going to be down somewhere in the area of 5%. And if it's down 10%, you're going to go down 10%. But if you start ejecting securities and going to cash, let's say you start ejecting at 5%, just a position. Then when the market goes down 10, you might only be down 9. Then if it continues to go down, you eject another position. Then if the market goes down 15, you might only be down 12. And then if it keeps going down, you eject position after position. And so sometimes maybe the market might be down 20, 25, you're only down 15. So you slow the descent. And the same thing might happen on the upside. As the market starts rising, you may not be fully vested. And then it starts rising, it looks like it's going to continue to rise, although no one can tell. You start adding positions. So if the market goes up 10%, you might not be fully vested. Your portfolio might go up 5%. And the market keeps running, and then you add a few more securities, you know, stocks or whatever have you. And then the next time the market goes up 15, you might be up 10. And then the market goes up 20, you might be up 17. So that is another way to put in an exit strategy. Another exit strategy would be buy the things that normally, not always, normally will we go in the opposite direction of the market. Now, sometimes utility stocks will go up in contrary to where the market goes down. Fixed income bonds and things. It's always thought to have a mixture of stocks and bonds in the portfolio. I might not totally agree with that strategy, but that is a modern portfolio theory. They mix that in. And so, having an exit strategy is very, very important, you know, because otherwise you could just ride it all the way down. You don't know where this thing's going to go. Now, the Dow was down about 500. It's down, looks like about 266 right now. So it's starting to come back. As I said, the Feds did come out this morning, if I read my news right, and said they weren't going to, they're going to be a little bit easier on raising the rates. So the Feds are just jawboning the market a little bit. And so, you know, yesterday's route, what was it yesterday? 800, 600, something brutal. And it was pretty broad-based yesterday. I saw a lot of red. This morning, as the market has gone down, I have seen some green, so that could possibly, not exclusively, could be a situation that this thing might be calming down. Bear market territory. What's bear market territory? Well, there are some that believe that there's an average. You know, we take an average of the market over 50 days, and that's called a 50-day moving average, and then they have a 200-day moving average. And some may believe that when the S&P crosses below the 50-day moving average, that signals a bear market. Again, that's a theory, right? 10% is regarded by a lot of people as a correction territory. And once it's down 10, some thinks there's a precursor of more bad things to come. Mainly that means more stock prices and more pain. Although various indicators, averages, nominal stock and index levels and other methods are used to forecast imminent direction by some, like I said, there's no hard and fast rule or theory to rely on. You know, this thing could turn like a stampede wildebeest. Isn't that the animal they always refer to? A herd of wildebeest, you know, might be 10,000 of them, and they all turn right at the same time, or they all turn left at the same time, or a flock of swallows, or whatever that thing is. So we don't know. We don't know. But it is better the whether these radical market movements, if they're causing you pain, if they're causing you sleepless nights, and I've had my share of sleepless nights. We've all been there. You don't have to entirely sell out. You can just start to eject positions or ask your advisor to start ejecting positions. Some advisors may not like you to eject positions because there's a historical precedent. If a person goes to cash, they may not come back in. And some advisors are compensated on how much money you have in the stocks and not on the cash position. Some are. So, as I say, I use a combined strategy of setting some predetermined selling levels of stocks and indexes that I bought, as well as taking into consideration all the other things that I see. Now, there's something called inverted yield curve. I think I'm going to cover that in a show. It sounds complicated. It kind of is, but you guys are all smart out there. So, you know, I think we can get it. I've covered it a couple times. The show's been on the air since 2005. So what is that, 13 years? So we've gone over many, 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 many shows, 277 shows and untold thousands of newscasts and articles that I've done. So I've adjusted these as we go. And I think all of them are valid up until today. Somebody said, well, I listened to show 12. Is it show still valid? Yeah. I think it is. Maybe some of the recommendations in there, maybe what somebody should consider are not valid, but in any case. It does take a complex set of circumstances to arrive at an ejection point, at a sell-off point. It takes, you know, what do you look at to know when to sell off? Well, for me, I do look at a complex set of circumstances. I look at the yield curve. I look at currencies, what they're doing. I look at bonds. I look at junk bonds. I look at investment-grade bonds. I look at municipal bonds. I look at utilities. You know, sometimes you see that when the market goes down, people buy tobacco stocks. You know, what do you normally, sometimes regarded as defensive, is food, consumer staples, and tobacco. Odd. Now, that doesn't mean when the market goes down to buy tobacco, because it may not go up. You don't know. That's the problem there. So once I've arrived at the time to sell or to eject certain positions, then implementing that is easy. You know, what positions do you eject first? Well, you know, whatever. That takes another set of circumstances, but, you know, ejecting something that is falling might be a way somebody can go. In a nutshell, when you move into more cash versus stocks or funds or whatever you're having, it lessens the movement up and down. You know, 100% cash won't move. Won't protect you in an inflationary environment, but it won't move. An all-stock portfolio will move a lot, you know. Again, if in extreme, if you go to all cash, there will be no movement, like a savings account. The point is, the more cash you have in lieu of stocks, the less you will lose in downturns. And on the flip side, the less you will make if the market decides to turn north again. One final word. I think it's important that you do have some sort of exit strategy. Something that says you get out. Okay, so we are looking at the Dow. Dow down 209. It has come back 300 something points. Versus today, we are December 6th, 2018, 12:36 p.m. in the year of our Lord, Pacific Standard Time. So we're kind of, if you listen to the show at a different time, the indices that I reference may not be accurate at that time. And, you know, it's interesting that fixed income, what we normally regard as bonds or preferred stocks, or things that have an interest rate on them. That's what we mean by fixed income. You know, they have an interest rate. You buy a bond and it's got 6% on there, or 3%. I wish 6%, 2% or 3% or whatever. That's fixed income. And normally, not always, it's fairly calm in the market. I mean, it doesn't move as much as stocks. It can. In 08 and 09, it was a bloodbath. But, again, in late 2016, We saw what some news media outlets shouted, things like carnage in the otherwise mundane every investing, the bond market. When Trump got elected, the fixed income market got hammered. Once again, you know, in October, when this thing started, October 8th, 2018, an article entitled Bonds in $916 billion Wipeout Sparked Fear of Worst Run Since 1976. The author went on to go out and highlight the eye-popping amount trimmed off aggregate bond prices, which is $916 billion. That's almost $1 trillion. No doubt some conservative investors thinking their portfolio held investments that were safe and therefore shouldn't move much twisted up their brokerage statements or probably put calls under their advisors saying, hey, I thought I was conservative. How come I'm down 5% or 4% or 8% or 12%? So, you know, they're generally regarded as a little bit more non-volatile, a little bit more stable. But that's, again, nothing is for sure because the market is not a science. It's not like math. 2 and 2 is 4. Provable, you know. Water boils at 212 at zero altitude. That's can be proven over and over. But when you get a degree in economics, I have a degree in economics way, way, way back there. It's a Bachelor of Arts. Yeah, I'm a Bachelor of Arts. It's not a Bachelor of Science, a BS. It's a BA because it's regarded as a sociological degree. Because although we have certain fundamental truths about economics, you know, there are different theories. You know, supply and demand is pretty much well accepted. Monetary inflation is pretty much well accepted. But there are different views on where to steer an economy. Obviously, right, you've got conservative economics economists called the Austrian economists. Then you've got the liberal economists called Keynesian economics. And I can probably safely say that the government prescribes to Keynesian economics, but they don't really practice it as it's supposed to be practiced, at least as John Maynard Keynes said. John Maynard Keynes, in his theory, that's why they call it Keynesian economics, basically said, in times of good times, the government should squirrel money away. And in times when the market gets upset, the government is the buyer of last resort, and it uses its savings to, you know, help soften the blow of a failing economy. Problem is, we do one, but not the other. They do soften the blow, or they attempt to, but they don't save during good times, right? So that's only half. So when they say they believe in Keynesian economics, but they're only doing one half of it, in my opinion, only one half. So, you know, it is interesting. It is interesting. So you can, when you buy a bond, you know, the most volatile type of bonds that move the most, are those that have the longest duration when interest rates move. So in other words, if you have a 30-year bond and interest rates move, if you hold the bond to the end, you're still going to get whatever interest rate is on the bond. But if the bond market is required to be liquid, in other words, you have a 30-year bond, you can still sell it. You can still sell it. But what happens if you got a 30-year bond that's paying 3%, and then bonds coming out currently are paying 6, nobody will buy your bond, right? Why would I buy your 30-year bond from you at 3% when the current payment rate or yield is 6? And you wouldn't. So the bond market says if you want to sell a 3% bond in a 6% environment, they do some calculations. Find out how much the guy is going to lose in interest over 3% versus 6% over what's left on the bond. And they discount the bond price. So let's say you bought a $10,000 bond paying 3, and interest rates rise, and you want out of your bond. Well, you paid $10,000, but if interest rates are higher than the fixed interest rate on your bond, they're going to scalp you on the price. Well, I paid $10,000. Well, you're only going to get 8. Well, why is that? Because you've got a 3% bond and nobody wants it unless you sell it at a discount. Conversely, if rates fall and you've got a 3% bond and current interest rates are 1%, then you might be able to sell your $10,000 bond for a lot more. So that's how the bonds work. Now, if you have a 30-year T-bill, right, still debt from the U.S. government, 30-year bond is debt, T-bill is a debt, If you have a 30-day T-bill, well, if interest rates rise in 30 days, you're going to get out of it, and you could buy a T-bill with the newest interest rate. So 30-day T-bills don't move nearly as much as a 30-year bond would be. So 30 years moves a lot when interest rates jack around. 30-year T-bills don't, 30-day debt instruments don't move much. You know, right now you can go on the web and look up some 30-day treasury funds or 30-day treasuries, and you'll find that they haven't moved much in this market route. Maybe they even moved up, because when people sell stocks, they're looking for safe places to put their money. And big hedge funds and portfolio managers that have a lot of money, and pension plans that have a lot of money, and when the stock market falls, they could have sell points, exit strategies. Most of this bigger guys on Wall Street have exit strategies. They get out. The average retail investor may not have any outs, but these big managers of big funds, they have outs, because they don't want to see their outs run to zero, right? They don't want to see their funds run to zero. So when they sell, they can't put the money in the bank because they only get $250,000 with FDIC insurance. So they can't put $100 million in a bank. It's at risk if the bank goes under. Now, whether the feds supersede that and guarantee that on their own, that could happen, and it has happened with money market funds and checking accounts in the past. But basically what they do is when money comes out of stocks, they punch in plans, sell $100 million worth of stuff, then they'll go out and they'll buy something else. They'll buy T-bills, or they'll buy whatever they think is going to be a safe haven. So when you see the market selling off, that means money is coming out of the market and it's going somewhere. The trick is, where is it going? And that's what you want to be in. Sound advice for all investors, no matter what happens, is to remain calm. Be patient. But if necessary or you're nervous, review your holdings and make sure you're not overexposed in one area. It's true that market upsets don't last forever. Markets don't fall forever. That I can say safely. They don't fall forever. Could they fall forever? Sure. Anything's possible. But they haven't. You know, they'll always stop at some point. So if you're running with a stampeding, panicking herd, it can be dangerous to one's portfolio health. Now, I will tell you, I pulled up a chart today, and I have saw some pretty wide sell-offs when we saw 1929. I believe I saw it took 25 years for the market to recover. That's a long time if you held for the long term. So when people say hold for the long term, well, if you held for the long term through 29, if I read my chart right, my memory serves me right, which is questionable because I don't take as much ginkgo biloba as I should. It took 25 years, and I saw another section took 14 years for it to come back. And the NASDAQ, well, you know, it popped in 2001. I don't know when that came back. It took years to come back. So that's the thing about when markets always goes up for the long term. No advisor, no investor, no government official, nobody can tell you that this thing will recover in any given time frame. Could we say that this thing will recover? Not legally, I can't. We don't know. But I don't think anybody would have a problem if I would say that markets don't fall forever. Maybe the regulators will hear this show as they listen to every show, and they'll say, you can't say that, Mark. So I could say it is possible that markets could fall forever. But historically, I can't find an example where that happened. Now, does that help? Not really. You know, your mind tends to wander into losing it all. I mean, my mind goes there too, you know. My God, I put $10,000 in, it could go to a grand. Some people can't tolerate a lot of loss. You know, I've always learned that investor tells me they can tolerate 10%. I'm always like, no, you can't. You can't tolerate 10%. You say you can, but you can't. Because I've had investors that tell me they tolerate 10%, and at 2%, 3%, well, they're nervous. They're calling you. So a variety of protection strategies, ejection of securities, going to more cash, you know, may be available to you to avoid such a need to act rashly in the face of rapid sell-offs, right? Remember, the market is a place of fear and greed. Right now, I can say it's risk off, and fear is rampant. We'll be right back on Money Matters.
We're in the money. We're in the money. We've got a lot of what it takes to get along. We're in the money. The skies are sunny.
the money. Well, I don't know about that. Dow down 140. 120, I'm sorry, down on 120. So there you go. So, yeah. You know, I think, you know, an exit strategy is important. I know that some people just don't try to time the market, but, you know, an exit strategy, in my opinion, is not timing the market. It's just, I mean, it's common sense, and I think it's a safe thing to do. But I think a lot of people would argue with me on that. You know, they'd say, just stay in. Well, you know, if you run into one of those areas where it takes 25 years to get back, you know, it's going to be hard. I saw a lot of people in 09, 08, 2010, you know, they were very, very upset because of the amounts of money they were losing down the holes of Wall Street. You know, I printed a couple of articles just a couple months ago that said the general direction of the market has been fairly flat. Well, that's changed. You know, there is a risk on and a risk off. Risk on means that investors are willing to take risks, and they may sell out bonds and fixed income to go into the stock market to earn more. You know, one of the things about having low interest rates is that your fixed income doesn't pay as much, right? When I was growing up, I would get 6% in a savings account. Anybody remember that, 6%? Well, you know, savings accounts don't yield a lot right now. And so it kind of forces people to get some yield. They go over to the stock market or they go over to bonds. But when interest rates in savings account drops, the interest rate on bonds drop because they have to compete. They can compete with the Fed's rate. And so Fed's rate is really, really low. You might not find many bonds that are offering 5, 6, 7, 8%. You can find them, but they're commensurate with the overall, you know, risk of the company that's asking you to borrow the money. I'm kind of a believer, you know, in times when things are upset, you know. When you sell a stock, most people think the stock, the money that you put up for the stock, goes to the company. Let's say you buy a share of John's Hardware Store, a public traded security that's on the market. Now, I don't know if there's a John's Hardware Store. I don't think there is, but let's say you do. Okay, when you buy that stock in the market from one of your brokers, whoever you use, that money doesn't go to John's Hardware Store. It goes to another investor. So although the VPs and the board of directors want their stock to go up because they all hold stock options, when a stock is transacted on the markets, the money doesn't go to the company. It goes to somebody else. So when you buy a bond, however, you're actually loaning money to that company. So you buy a bond from John Hardware Store. John's Hardware Store needs the money. Otherwise, they wouldn't go out to, you know, to float a bond and ask you to loan the money. So basically, they're saying, we need money. Please lend me the money because we need it. And I will pay you back from future income. So it's a promise to pay you back on future revenue streams. So if I'm not selling so much now, I need money to pay my employees and to keep the stores open. I will go to you, I'll pay you a certain percentage rate. The more risky I am, the higher percentage rate I will have to pay you to get you to loan me money. And then I will turn the business around and I will pay you from the profits that I will make. So let's say you get 3 or 4% from that guy from John's Hardware Store. Now, you turn around. Instead of giving you money to John's Hardware Store in a form of buying their bond, you buy a company that pays you a dividend of 4%. Now, this company hasn't asked you for their money. They don't need the money, but their stock is out there. So you buy the stock, the company doesn't need your money, and so you're not giving it to them, or you're just buying their stock. Now, when you buy a stock, you own a small piece of the company. So if you buy a stock of a tomato company, you now own some tomatoes and part of the plant and part of the equipment. You own part of everything. And if they pay you a dividend, if they promise to pay you a dividend is something that they say they will pay. There's no promise that they will pay. They say they will pay, but they can cut it, eliminate it, increase it, or decrease it at any time. So it's not, you know, not a contract. Let's say they say we're paying a 3% dividend. We're scheduled to pay a dividend. And so you get the same amount as you might get in a bond, but in return for giving somebody money who needs it, you're giving money to a company that doesn't need it. They're just going to give you something in return. So in my opinion, I kind of like that a little bit better than buying a bond. My opinion. But there would be many out there that would argue with me on that, because stock prices can move around, and bonds, unless they default or partially default, basically, we're not going to pay you. We're going to declare bankruptcy. Can be less volatile. They're not going to move around. When a bond moves around, it's only because you sold it early or because the company has decided not to pay you at all. And that can happen. Now, there are insured bonds. You can get an insured bond. But it's only good as company insuring it, right? Bonds are not insured, at least not a government bond. If it's a corporate bond or private bond, city bond or state bond, they're not insured by the U.S. government. They're insured by bond insurers like AIG or Ambac or Raytheon. Now, I only have to have you prime your memory a little bit to see if any of those names seem familiar. Because if you have a bond insurer and he insures a lot of bonds, he's required to keep a certain amount of cash on hand, and he doesn't have to keep any more. So they don't have the same amount of cash as they've insured bonds. So they could basically say, we're out of cash. We can't pay off everybody. But the government did step in 08 and 09 and help that amount. Okay. So that basically concludes our show of Money Matters. And it's a 200 and what? What is this? 278th show? What did I tell you guys? 278th show of Money Matters, entitled More Pain to Begin the Winter of 2018. Remember, discussions in this show should not be considered specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I'm an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Remember, indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested in due directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Dividends do not insure against loss, and dividends can be cut, eliminated, increased, or decreased at any time. Investing involves risk. Depending on the types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal in the worst case, right? We don't want that to happen. Okay. My name's Mark. You can go to our website if you like, moneymanagementreiterator.com. It's free. There's no charge, no sign-up charge, nothing. It's all free. Get past shows. Read articles there. Don't spam you. It's our way of saying thank you for listening to the community radio station. If you'd like to send me an email, just send it to the program director at the radio station, and they'll forward it to me. Happens all the time. So don't panic. The Dow is down 99, so we'll see if this thing is finally over. Don't know. Don't panic. Stay calm and have an exit strategy, in my opinion. Thanks a lot. Have a great day. God bless.